The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. A big win at the Supreme Court as a 9-0 decision reins in the administrative state.
It was a huge win against the overreach of the federal government, particularly the Environmental Protection Agency.
We'll look at another case that could well set precedent upholding First Amendment freedom.
Their freedom all hangs in the balance before the United States Supreme Court. What the Supreme Court says in Lori's case will determine the future of all of us.
We'll look at Bud Light and Target.
The left has done such a good job of weaponizing so many systems that affect corporate decision making.
And what really matters, the nuts and bolts price they are paying.
This stock every day has just been going down, down, down.
All this and more. I'm Seth Leibson, coming to you from Phoenix and AM 960 The Patriot, where I host in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. Learn more and listen to my program at 960thepatriot.com. If you'd be so kind, take a moment to follow me on Twitter, at Seth Leibson, Seth, L-E-I-B-S-O-H-N, and follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. We'll begin today at the Supreme Court. For all of you who are concerned with the growth of the administrative state, or, as you hear so often, the deep state, there are a couple of very key cases you should be tracking with. Last month, the court agreed to hear a case you'll hear referred to as Loper v. Raimondo. That case could upend what, since 1984, has been referred to as Chevron deference. Simply put, the precedent of the 1984 Chevron case gave wide latitude to these government agencies. That case will be argued in October. Conservatives have additional grounds for optimism after a 9-0 decision. Yes, a 9-0 decision from the court that came down late last week. The case? Sackett v. the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Mike Davis of the Article 3 Project explains. He was a guest of Joe Piscopo's on AM 970, The Answer in New York City.
What happened with this Supreme Court ruling on the EPA water rule?
So what happened here is for a decade, unelected EPA bureaucrats legally terrorized this couple up in Idaho, Michael and Chantel Sackett. They were trying to build a home on their land near a lake, near Priest Lake up in Idaho, and the EPA made their lives living hell. They tried to say, the EPA tried to say that this lake up in Idaho was navigable water. Interstate commerce subject to EPA regulation because apparently the Sacketts moved some dirt when they were building their home. And so it went through a decade of legal terrorism. And finally, the Supreme Court 9-0 ended this, said that the EPA did not have the statutory power to try to regulate what the Sacketts were doing up in Idaho. So it was a huge win for all Americans. It was a huge win against the overreach of the federal government, particularly the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah, it's a huge blow to the EPA going in with such power. I wonder if this will have a lasting effect in other decisions along this regard, Mike.
Well, yeah, of course it does, because what the Supreme Court said to the EPA is that you do not have the power to regulate every pond across this country. You have to essentially, what the Supreme Court is holding is, and this is what Congress intended when they passed this law, is the EPA has the power to regulate navigable waters, interstate navigable waters across the country, and including waters that touch those waters. So if there is a lake that connects to a waterway, that connects to an interstate navigable water, then the EPA can regulate this. But they don't get to regulate every farm pond across the United States of America.
Yeah, it's amazing, though, the power of the government. How will the EPA circumvent this?
What they could try to do is go back to Congress and have Congress change the law to give the EPA more power. That's why it's so important. This is why elections matter. As long as you have people in Congress and people in the White House who want to protect farmers and ranchers and everyday Americans, this won't happen anymore.
This is all bogus, Mike Davis. You know it better than anybody else. And we're tired of it as a people. And we got to go to the court that poor couple that you're talking about in Idaho, this is a big win. And hopefully this will change the tenor of the times. It's an impossible situation that we find ourselves in these days. I know we have in districts all around the country a lot of Trump appointees. What happened with the Biden? If you could walk me through this, Mike Davis, if you'd be so kind to do that, sir. The Biden appointees, are they okay? Have they been okayed? Because that to me is a real danger as far as law and order of the people that Biden is appointing. I'm talking about judges all around the districts in the country, Mike.
President Trump transformed the federal judiciary. He transformed the 5-4 left of center Supreme Court to the 5-4 Clarence Thomas Supreme Court. President Trump also transformed the critically important federal courts of appeals around the country. There are 13 courts of appeals, which are the last stop for more than 99% of the federal appeals, because the Supreme Court only takes less than 100 cases a year for oral argument. Trump transformed a majority of these critically important federal courts of appeals to constitutionalist judges. President Biden is quickly undoing this because he is very, very rapidly appointing judges, and President Biden is appointing left-wing radicals to the federal courts of appeals. And if President Biden wins a second term, if Republicans do not win the White House in November of 2024, President Biden will transform the Supreme Court and the lower federal court, and we are going to be done as a country. There goes our God-given rights to speak, to associate, to worship, to protect ourselves. Our rights will be out the door. And I'm not being hyperbolic. This will absolutely happen if President Biden transforms the Supreme Court back to a liberal Supreme Court. The liberals do not care about our First Amendment rights and our Second Amendment rights, and they've made that very clear.
Also, before the court this term was a case that will address First Amendment free expression. That is, can the government compel the creative professional to use his or her talents to express a message that is at odds with the professional's deeply held convictions? The case is 303 Creative versus Alanis. Lori Smith is the owner of 303 Creative, a design studio in Denver, Colorado, and she's represented by our friends at ADF, including Kelly Fedoruk. They both sat down with Dennis Prager.
Let me understand, what does the law say?
Well, the law says that essentially what Colorado is doing is saying that you have to create messages, create art that celebrate the topics that the government says you have to create. And so for Lori and even for Jack, they don't want to create art that celebrates same-sex weddings. That goes against their faith and their beliefs. They want to create consistent with their faith. And Colorado is saying, if you do that, we're going to punish you. We're going to fine you. We're going to say what you can and you can't say.
So that law presumably was passed by the state legislature.
That's correct. We challenged this law in federal court, and we've worked our way all the way up to the United States Supreme Court.
Really?
Where
it's
currently pending. We had argument in December.
Were you one of the arguers?
I was on the legal team, yes, sir. And we are looking forward to a decision. We could get a decision any day now, as early as Thursday, but definitely by the end of June.
Oh, I'm
the Supreme
so
Court
were you
will be
present
in, on this.
In the Supreme Court during this?
Yes.
I'm very curious to hear what the questions and what you picked up. When was this law passed, by the way, in Colorado?
It was passed, I think, in 2012, if I recall correctly.
So it's
before that.
So it's a little more than 10 years old. And you cannot discriminate, obviously that's the word they would use, right? In what and on the basis of what?
Well, it says that you can't discriminate in a public accommodation on the basis of sexual orientation.
Why is a design firm a public accommodation?
Well, what's interesting about this particular case with Lori is that Colorado actually agrees and conceded to two things. First, they said that Lori serves everyone. It doesn't matter who they are. She works with everyone, including those who identify as LGBT. So she works with everyone. Then they also agreed that when she creates her websites, her graphics, that these are speech, that they're free speech. So despite agreeing to both these incredible facts.
That's mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing, right?
Oh, my God.
They conceded that it's speech, but what's terrifying is that then at that point they said, well, we still have the power as the government of Colorado to come in and force her to create what we think is right versus what she thinks is right.
Right, so you can't discriminate against ideas in Colorado. Not just can't discriminate against people. She doesn't discriminate against people.
No, she serves everybody. And
exactly.
For her, the lens by which she looks at every decision of what should she create is based on the message requested, never
by,
the person
This is why,
requesting.
Just have to say this, why I've known this all of my life. All leftists are totalitarians. There has never been an exception since Vladimir Lenin to the state of Colorado. They don't believe you can even express ideas. It's not a matter of bigotry against an individual. You can't be, even let's say you were bigoted. You're allowed to be bigoted in an idea. That is the way life works. But they want to control the way you think.
Well, and that's what's so frightening about all of this. And it's, as you're mentioning these other totalitarian regimes, if you give the government the power to censor your ideas or anyone's ideas, you give them the power to censor all of our ideas. So everyone's freedom, even those who completely disagree with Lori about marriage or any other topic, their freedom all hangs in the balance before the United States Supreme Court. What the Supreme Court says in Lori's case will determine the future of all of us as
Americans.
That's
right. So you have argued this just this past week?
In December. It was in December.
In December at the Supreme Court level. How many ADF lawyers were present in the Supreme Court?
Well, there were quite a few of us there, both inside the courtroom and outside the court. It was a monumental day for freedom of speech.
Okay, so two questions. What did the state of Colorado's lawyers argue, and what did you gather from questions from the justices?
Well, the core of Colorado's argument was that we, the government, have the power to control what people say and what people don't say. They've even admitted that they want to eliminate certain ideas that they don't like from the marketplace. And they tried to make those arguments to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't think the court really appreciated those arguments. They seemed to have a lot of questions for Colorado's attorney. And Justice Gorsuch in particular, at one point he said, it seems to me with Lori, what she's trying to do is all about the message. This is not about the person. And when he said that, when he asked that question, I knew that he understood the core of what's at stake in Lori's case. Because for her, there's just some messages that she can't create, no matter who asks her to create them.
Did you pick up any sympathy for Colorado from any of the justices?
There were some that seemed to perhaps see some credence in their arguments. But I would say the majority of the justices definitely seemed troubled.
You may win this case.
I think we will win. I think
if you win, I am hereby announcing Lori Smith Day on the Dennis Prager Show when that happens. You will be on my calendar, Lori.
Well, we can celebrate for all of us.
This is huge for the whole country.
Yes, if you
can suppress speech, it's over. Because it's only about speech.
Coming up, we'll look at American corporations gone woke.
The left has done such a good job of weaponizing so many systems that affect corporate decision making.
In the next segment of Town Hall Review, stay with us.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy celebrates our 25th anniversary year, please watch our new promotional video based on Ronald Reagan's 1976 radio address, Shaping the World for 100 Years to Come, on our Pepperdine SPP YouTube channel. And if you know someone who's thinking about graduate school this fall, we welcome applications at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. That's publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Seth Leibson in this week for Hugh. 2023 may well be a watershed year for corporate America and its embrace of all things woke, from DEI officers, diversity, equity, and inclusion, to ESG management frameworks, which is environmental, social, and governance, to emboldened hard left brand management executives. It's all kind of come to a head this year, most recently with what we've seen from Bud Light and now Target. Molly Hemingway of The Federalist joined Hugh Hewitt.
I don't think it's a boycott, by the way. I don't see people out there saying boycott Bud Light. I see people not drinking Bud Light. I didn't see any Bud Light at the Memorial Day barbecue yesterday. Did you?
I have seen almost nobody drinking Bud Light since this began. I mean, I have seen it like in the wild once, but it's shocking. Like even if you go to sporting venues or places where you would normally see quite a bit, but yeah, people don't want to be insulted and they don't want to be attacked this was a horrible decision by Bud Light to go down this road.
So I think there are two stories. One is the deal on the debt limit, and one is the Bud Light catastrophe. And it is a catastrophe for the brand and Anheuser-Busch. I think the latter is the bigger story, although all the headlines are on the debt limit deal, which will go, as all things do, away the moment that it passes, and we'll worry about the next thing, which will be the budget deadline. Weighing them both against each other, which is more significant, Molly, for American life?
Yeah, no, I agree that it would be the participation by corporations in the agenda of the left and finally seeing some pushback to that from people on the right is a bigger story, which is not to say that the debt limit is not a big story. It is. It's just there was a very limited range of possible outcomes there, and we landed in that range of possible outcomes.
I'm going to come back to that, but I do believe this is a flare that every C-suite that is direct to consumer, it may not impact businesses that are not direct to consumer, but direct to consumer are having very confidential, quiet conversations in every C-suite room discussing how to avoid this cliff. It's not that they're political. They just are in business, Molly, and I don't think they can miss this.
Well, the risk to doing what Bud Light did and what so many corporations have done is now becoming quite clear. You can be bullied by the left into adopting the most extreme of their political objectives and putting it into your advertising. You can do that, but you may actually destroy your company if you do it. And that's why it's so important what normal people did here in this Bud Light scenario, because the left has done such a good job of weaponizing so many systems that affect corporate decision making, and they've been able to get away with it for a very long period of time, while most of America was just sort of hoping that everyone would stop being so crazy. And now they realize, like, okay, we actually have to do something in order to stop this insanity from happening and taking over literally every product that we buy.
Now with Target, now with, I gather, Kohl's is involved in another, let's drive off that cliff, and Bud Light primarily. Do you think the CEOs are calling in their people and talking to them about this?
Absolutely. I mean, you had a lot of people allowing decisions to be made by a sector of their corporation that was very, very politically engaged, and they could just kind of get away with this. And now there's going to be a lot more oversight over whether, you know, a single advertising executive can tank the whole company. And just people will be reluctant, as they should be. I mean, of course, with advertising, there's always some transmission of values. But when the values are so, well, negative in this case, so wrong, but also just so controversial, it's really not something you're going to see people leaning into as much, even with the system still in place that encourage corporations to do this type of behavior, which those do need to be dismantled.
Just a few minutes ago, I said that this hard left woke progressivism may well come to a head this year. That is, things may change. I say that because some of these major corporations, the major brands, are actually paying a price. Here's Trish Regan from her podcast.
You're crossing a line, and it's a line from which you can't really return. So when I look at the stock price today, I mean, it is incredible. This stock every day has just been going down, down, down. Since I've been on the air with you, it's gone down even further. Now down off 3.36%. As we began the program, it was down 2.9%. It's down nearly $5 a share, $4.66 a share today. It's lost more than $10 billion worth of market cap, trading at $134.27 a share. Just to keep it in perspective, you know, it was up around $160 before all this started. And the other thing I think you got to keep in mind here is the volume of activity. So traders are furiously selling this one. And I know that because when I look at the volume of sales, nearly 6 million shares have traded hands today. Now, the 65-day average, like what is the average amount that this stock, Target, ticker symbol TGT, actually trades? It's like 3.5 million. So it's like nearly double, right? Like nearly double. People are like, get rid of this as fast as you can, because you see what they're waking up to is this very much could be a whole Bud Light situation all over again, where people are going to say, I'm not into it. You know, I don't need to shop at Target Why do I need to shop at Target? I can get all the same products elsewhere, like Walmart. Anyway, it's actually bizarre. So when I said maybe the company was having or suffering from its marketing department being a little too in the Bud Light Alyssa Heinerstein camp, well, I may be onto something here. Let me share with you. This is a picture that came from Daily Wire of Carlos Zavreta. Now, Carlos Zavreta is the head of marketing there, or VP, vice president of brands there at Target. And this particular gentleman, again, vice president of brands, good job. He is part of a group that is called GLSEN. It stands for Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. And he's a board member there. It's an advocacy group for K-12 transgenderism and gay status. Now, again, like, there's a difference between being compassionate and saying, you know, if someone is struggling with any of this, we want to make sure that, you know, they have opportunities for help or opportunities to recognize what they are, if that's the case, maybe, all right? Like, let me just get that out there. Like, this is not, but when you somehow then say, okay, we're going to take this and not only do like our pride display with our baby t-shirts, but we're actually going to push this idea of the tuck them in swimsuits. And we're going to push the idea of girls having to restrain their developing breasts. Like, then you're getting a little out there, okay? Like, do you really need to sell that at Target? Because last I checked, the actual percentage of transgender people in the country, it's like 0.1%. I mean, I know you're heading for a higher number at this rate because everybody's all confused. Saying, wait, saying, what am I? I mean, these kids that don't even understand heterosexual sexuality yet. And yeah, you're forcing this stuff. So I'm telling you, Target is in trouble, just like Bud Light was in trouble. Speaking of which, let's take a look at shares of Bud, shall we? Bud is the ticker, and oh, my gosh, wow, you guys are pretty powerful. I'm looking at shares of Bud right now, Anheuser-Busch. They're down 4.11%, another $2.35 a share at $54.80. So you see, these boycotts have long legs, as they like to say, really long legs, because nobody's going to be caught drinking a Bud Light. Have you seen some of the pictures? I have. Over Memorial Day weekend, people were posting pictures in liquor stores, and it was like the beer aisle was sold out except for Bud Light. I was away. I was down in Florida. I didn't see anybody drinking Bud Light.
Coming up.
For us to believe that we have a capitalist economy at the moment is delusional.
George Gilder, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in just a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with the Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, Hugh will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Seth Leibson. George Gilder has been a leading voice in conservative thought since the 1970s. He's written extensively on economics, including wealth and poverty in 1981, and on technology and innovation, including Life After Google in 2018. Now he's out with his latest, Life After Capitalism, The Meaning of Wealth, The Future of the Economy, and The Time Theory of Money. Gilder was a guest with Dennis Prager.
Is the implication that capitalism is being destroyed, or there was something better after capitalism?
Both. That both things are true. I believe that we don't have a capitalist economy in the United States at the moment. You know, the trillions of dollars that are being deployed for climate change and a suicidal energy transition, a corruption of all the universities. This is a dire predicament, and it's not capitalism. And for us to believe that we have a capitalist economy at the moment is delusional. So I want to dispense with that. But I also think that it's partly the result of capitalist theory. It was Milton Friedman and Richard Nixon who took us off the gold standard in 1971 and created this hypertrophy of finance that now dominates our economy and allows politicians to just swamp the private sector with subsidies that corrupt it and render it uncapitalistic and actually stultify it to a great extent. So, but I believe that the information economy offers an answer. Information theory defines information as surprise. And this is the heart of capitalism, that because we can't predict the future, we have to be open to it, which entails freedom. And information theory defines wealth as knowledge. We got ample matter in the universe. It's knowledge that is wealth. Growth is learning. It's the learning new things, unexpected thing. And money is what remains scarce when all else grows abundant. It represents time in the economy. And essentially, with the money printing in debt, politicians are stealing from the future. But entrepreneurship is surprise. To give you an idea of the predicament, I recently went to Israel to explore the future of the world economy. And Jim Tour at Rice University in Houston has invented a whole series of new technologies based on graphene, which is an element as important as silicon was at the beginning of the semiconductor era. And his laboratory, Nobel Laureate Laboratory, spawned some 16 companies. They're all being funded in Israel. American venture capitalists are so corrupted by the carbon footprint issue and the manipulations of associated with these trillions of dollars of appropriations for government programs that all these companies had to be, almost all, 14 of the 16 companies that are the most important in the world, in my judgment, because graphene is the foundation for a whole new industrial revolution, the ability to produce it in volume is hugely important. As Tor says, we don't recycle, we upcycle.
Government funding has been a suppressor of the pursuit of information.
Absolutely. I mean, imagine if they're talking about changes that they want to affect by 2050 or 2040 or something. This is what capitalism does. Entrepreneurship produces new information, which is identified by its surprisal. This is the foundation of information theory that Claude Shannon and John von Neumann developed. Information is defined as unexpected bits, surprise. And they want to guarantee everything. The government is trying to have a guaranteed path to 2050. And I call it emergency socialism. You declare an emergency.
Right. Well, eventually emergency tyranny, as we saw during the lockdowns.
Coming up.
It's amazing in Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley probably loses money now and net. They're so oriented toward government programs and subsidies that they are no longer a source of creativity in new areas.
More with George Gilder when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in just a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy celebrates our 25th anniversary year, please watch our new promotional video based on Ronald Reagan's 1976 radio address, Shaping the World for 100 Years to Come, on our Pepperdine SPP YouTube channel. And if you know someone who's thinking about graduate school this fall, we welcome applications at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. That's publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Seth Leibson, in for Hugh. For decades now, we've looked at California's Silicon Valley as the innovation hub for so much of everything on the leading edge of technology, software, hardware, investment capital, and startup tech corporations. But that hub might be shifting, or, according to George Gilder, it already has shifted. It has shifted to Israel. Let's pick up with more of Dennis Prager's conversation with George Gilder, talking about life after capitalism.
But what do you think animates this suicidal mission to replace natural gas, nuclear power, and oil with wind and solar? What animates it?
It's a secular religion. It's the belief that human beings somehow are a burden on the planet, and that world populations have to drop some 50% or the planet will be unsustainable, as the term is used. It's a false worship of a kind of nihilistic religion. It's a cult, and because Al Gore and all his followers were such key figures in the Democratic Party, all the politicians crowded into the cult.
Again, I want to just restate one of his major points. Given that knowledge is power, and tell me if I'm, again, summarizing you accurately, the government has stifled, the U.S. government has stifled a massive pursuit of new information by funneling trillions of dollars into green energy projects, so that companies that would otherwise be looking into things like graphene, which Israel overwhelmingly is now dominating because American companies have basically been put to sleep. If we can make billions upon hundreds of billions of dollars by government funding us for wind and solar projects, why bother with graphene? Is that a fair summary?
It's a fair summary. It's a caricature, but it's a summary. It's fair. I mean, it's amazing in Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley probably loses money now, and net. They're so oriented toward government programs and subsidies that they are no longer a source of creativity in new areas. They're
right. That's fascinating.
Although AI is the next phase of computer technology, but they somehow imagine it as part of their religion that AI usurps the human mind. And this is just a delusional characterization of what a system that shuffles labels, that doesn't have any access to reality. It just shuffles labels on things, numerical labels, and produces outputs based on the inputs from the whole internet. And this does not represent anything that vaguely resembles a human mind.
So I love asking you about everything, George. So tell me, what's your theory on why the marriage rate is the lowest in American history and the birth rate is the lowest in American history?
I think it's part of the same religious cult. It's kind of a secular religious cult that worships nature and regards human beings and human life as being the nemesis of nature. That believes that immediate pleasure should usurp long-term goals and the fabric of families that carry human life on into the future and connect men to the future through the wombs of women. This results in that's the basis for human civilization, and we're forgetting the crucial principles that make us human beings, creative in the image of our creator.
When I was at Columbia, I came up with the idea, because I asked myself, this was the 70s in graduate school there, I was learning nonsense, and I was bewildered at how many intelligent people could teach nonsense. And then I had the only epiphany of my life. I never had a theophany, but I did have an epiphany out of nowhere. Wisdom begins with the fear of God. And I realized there's no wisdom at Columbia because there's no God at Columbia. As I've pointed out, only secular people, not all secular people, but only secular people say men give birth. The post Judeo-Christian world is absurd.
It is.
Yep. Okay. Well, we're on board on that.
It is absurd. I wrote Sexual Suicide in 1970s and Men in Marriage in 1985. They're all still in print because I've reread it for the first time in 20 or 30 years. And everything in Men in Marriage is sort of coming true.
That's right.
In a kind of bizarre circus of sexual absurdities. And it's amazing. I mean, it's partly our wealth. I mean, we're cosseted by vast accumulated wealth. And that allows people to imagine that they can escape the facts of life. Deny them or suppress them. And I find in Israel, there's less of this. They're under the gun in Israel and have to recognize realities. And I know that there's a lot of bizarre stuff going on in Israel too, but under the influence of the United States, I believe. But the fact is that enterprise in Israel is really rigorous and realistic and is crucial to the future of the United States. We still face an Israel test. If Israel really gets thwarted by its enemies, it will be a tragedy. It will be the end of American future as well.
Coming up.
Sex is now believed to be chiefly just the pursuit of temporary pleasures. This kind of nihilistic green religion that people are adopting corrupts everything and is eroding families.
A few more minutes with George Gilder in the final segment of the Town Hall Review. Stay with us.
Officer Tatum here. It is critical we keep AM radio in all cars and all trucks. More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for news, weather, and opinions. AM is also the backbone of emergency alert systems, keeping you advised on threatening weather conditions and amber alerts. Text AM to the number 52886. Tell Congress that we need AM radio in our cars. Again, text AM to the number 52886. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. George Gilder is an amazing author and intellectual. His classic work, Men on Marriage, influenced everyone from Dennis Prager to my old boss, Jack Kemp. What a scholar. As we consider today the future of wealth and innovation in our nation and the hurdles we have in our way, we bump up pretty quickly against some hard, concrete realities. In order for us to develop anything at all, we need to be here. That is, humans need to reproduce. Something we're not very committed to in recent days. Today, it seems we're more preoccupied with the fiction that a biological male really is, ontologically, a female. And our preoccupations have significant impact on our nation in a number of ways, but most immediately related to our conversation here, these preoccupations have a deleterious impact on our nation's reproduction rate. Let's return for a few more minutes of Dennis Prager with George Gilder talking about life after capitalism.
Is there anything that surprises you? In other words, well, I'll give you one specific example, that men give birth, that men menstruate, that medical schools increasingly do not even say pregnant woman. they say birthing person. Is this something you would have predicted?
Well, yes, because what it is, it's the result of the complete separation of sexuality from procreation. Sex is now believed to be chiefly just the pursuit of temporary pleasures. And the fact is, if procreation isn't involved in sexuality, then transsexuality and all sorts of flavors of lesbianism and gay and trans experimentation is perfectly possible. It's because, but human survival is dependent on sex roles, on the differences between men and women, and the more elaborate long-term sexuality of women leading on to maternity, and the protective sexuality of men protecting a home and a family and providing for it. All these models are crucial to the future of our race. And so this kind of nihilistic green religion that people are adopting corrupts everything and is eroding families. Yeah. And it's why I think that it's coming to an end, though. I think this is a moment of madness that is going to pass.
It's an honor and joy to talk to you. Anything George Gilder has written, you should read. The latest just out now is Life After Capitalism. George Gilder, may you write another dozen books.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you've benefited from what we're doing, mention us to a friend. Sign up for our podcast at townhallreview.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producers David Pouchon, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Seth Leibson, thanking you for joining us for Town Hall Review.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.